106.9 Academy FM.
BizConnect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Good afternoon and welcome to the BizConnect radio show with myself, Martin White, and in the studio today, my co-host...
Lynette Wood.
Lynette, great to see you again.
And you. I haven't been here since January, Martin.
Oh, crap. Is it really been that long?
I know, yes. Amazing.
What have you been up to? Have you been hiding yourself?
I've just been busy. You know, hospitality is back.
Great. Okay, well, we're going to talk about that a little bit later on in the show, but we've also got another fabulous studio guest with us. Lynette, introduce our guest to the listeners today.
Oh, we've got Phil Berwick from Berwick Tax today.
Phil, great to have you with us.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. Very nice to be here.
Lovely to see you. You're going to be talking to us all about tax investigations today, aren't you?
That's right. Tax inquiries, disputes and investigations.
Fantastic. And how businesses can perhaps get ahead of the curve there when it comes to managing their tax affairs.
Certainly how they can mitigate their position and avoid any problems with the revenue if possible.
Any unwelcome surprises.
And it's going to make it exciting to listen to too.
Fantastic. Good. Well, do stay with us. What we're going to do now, I think, is play a little bit of music. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Phil. So see you after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
BizConnect. The show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the BizConnect radio show this Monday, the 14th of March. We've got a varied show today. We've got, as I said earlier, our co-host Lynette Wood in the studio. She's going to be talking to us all about Q Hotels and their business and leisure offering in the marketplace. But for now, I think what we're going to do is have a chat with Phil Berwick from Berwick Tax. Phil, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much again, Martin, and lovely to be here.
Now, tax isn't necessarily sort of on the top of everybody's discussion list, is it, necessarily? In fact, I think quite often it'll, anything to do with HMRC will possibly sort of send shivers down people's backs, won't it?
I think it certainly does, but it's surprising. Whenever you meet someone for the first time and you tell them what you do and you work in tax, everyone's got a tax question that they want to pose to you. So
exactly.
I don't always tell people what I do.
Yeah. Well, we are coming towards the end of another tax year. So it's very timely that you're joining us today. What we're not here to do today is provide sort of accountancy advice, obviously. If people have specific tax questions along those lines, they really should direct them towards their accountant. But what we are going to do today is cover the whole kind of topic of tax investigations, aren't we? And how, people need to be kind of dealing with those affairs, really. So just give us an introduction, Phil, to who you are and what you do in that space.
Thank you, Martin. I used to be an inspector of taxes in the Inland Revenue a long time ago. After leaving the Revenue, I've then spent quite a number of years helping clients of all sorts where they've got disputes, inquiries or investigations with the Revenue.
Right.
And I act for, say, a wide range of clients, self-employed individuals, business owners, across the complete spectrum of revenue compliance activity. So I get involved with a lot of fraud investigations where someone's done something seriously wrong, and other types of inquiries as well, where maybe someone's just made a simple mistake because the tax law is so complex.
Yeah,
it runs to many, many pages, and it is very easy to make a mistake. And I also help out clients who maybe aren't under inquiry with the Revenue, but there is a problem there, and they just want help in disclosing that, telling the authorities about it, and coming out as unscathed as possible.
So not everybody sets out to defraud the Revenue. I think, we should be kind of clear about that. Some people clearly do, but many others will just find themselves subject to a tax investigation, an inquiry from HMRC, for example, into their tax affairs.
Definitely, and often it isn't through any fault of their own. Maybe they, as I say, the rules are very complex. A lot of professionals don't understand all the rules. So as an individual, you've got minimal chance of understanding those very complex rules. Mm. Sometimes you get bad advice. That happens. And ultimately, it's the client, it's the individual who has to suffer and deal with the consequences. Mm. But there are ways that you can be proactive if you notify that if you're aware that there is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because the penalties that the Revenue can charge up to 200% in relation to some offshore income. So it's important that if someone has made an error, that they deal with it as soon as possible.
Yeah. So, just for the benefit of all of us complete novices out there, what actually is a tax investigation? How does that come about? How do I even know that I'm the subject of an investigation? What will be the kind of the process of communication there?
Well, there's a statutory framework for the conduct of inquiries with the revenue. And what should happen is that you, as the businessman, as the individual, will get a letter from the revenue telling you that your tax return, for example, is under inquiry and it's being looked into. And with that, there is a statutory framework. So there are a set of rules for taxpayers to follow and also for the revenue to follow as well. Mm-hmm. But what I think your listeners also need to be aware of is there are situations where the revenue may write to them where there isn't any formal inquiry being conducted. So if your listeners get a letter from the revenue, it's important to establish what is it that they're being sent. Mm-hmm. Is it a formal inquiry, mm-hmm. whether a set of rules, or is it something that's non-statutory?
Mm-hmm.
But whatever letter they get, it's important that they don't ignore it, because the revenue aren't going to go away. Once mm-hmm. they've written to you,
mm-hmm.
they're not going to go away. They're not going to put the letter in the drawer, even if the recipient may be inclined to do so.
Mm-hmm. So my first port of call then in that instance would be to have an initial conversation perhaps with my accountant to say, you know, do you recognise this kind of format of letter? Do you think that, you know, this is information that you can help me provide, or is it something different? I mean, what would your advice be in the first instance?
I think it depends on the person who's receiving the letter. Certainly if you haven't got an accountant or an advisor acting,
mm-hmm.
It would be sensible to speak to a professional
mm-hmm.
who is well-versed in these matters. If you've got an existing accountant, that's the obvious port mm-hmm. of call.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, don't ignore it. I wouldn't recommend ringing HMRC
mm-hmm.
because you're not going to get unbiased advice.
Right.
So speak to your accountant. Mm-hmm. And what often I'm asked to assist in these cases
mm-hmm.
by the accountant,
mm-hmm.
because the accountant recognises that mm-hmm. it's a little bit out of the ordinary, they're out of their depth,
mm-hmm.
they want some specialist help, and then I will get the call from the accountant. So
okay.
if someone's got an accountant, speak to the accountant
mm-hmm.
as the first port of call. Mm-hmm. They should be a good first port of reference.
Fantastic, good. Now, let's talk quickly about fraud investigations, if we can, because that, I'm assuming, is something slightly different. And I think I've got some sort of practical experience here of a friend of mine that was subject to a VAT investigation. They were in some kind of chain of businesses where the business at the top ultimately, I think, was involved in a VAT fraud, and then everybody below that in the supply chain was also then part of an investigation which actually froze their business assets and ultimately put them out of business. Is that the sort of thing that we're talking about here?
Well,
or?
Certainly, and fraud takes many forms. And on VAT, the carousel fraud, as
mm-hmm.
you say, where you've got a supply chain,
mm-hmm.
and it's very easy to get caught up as an innocent party.
Mm.
When the revenue suspect that someone has committed fraud in relation to tax, whether that's VAT, income tax, corporation tax, any of the other taxes that they cover, the revenue have got a number of options. The first consideration is whether they're going to go criminal and start a criminal investigation. That's when the revenue turn up, 7 o'clock in the morning, individual gets arrested, business premises get searched as well.
Mm.
Or there's a civil process for the investigation of fraud. And that's where the revenue would write to the individual, we suspect that you've committed fraud, we're going to invite you into this process, which
mm-hmm.
is called the Contractual Disclosure Facility,
mm-hmm.
also known as Code of Practice 9.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the revenue go down that route, you are given immunity from prosecution as long as you make a full confession
mm-hmm.
of anything that you've done wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are various other boxes that need to be ticked as well, but certainly if you get a letter suggest with a suspicion of fraud, that is probably beyond most accountants' remit, and that's when you would definitely need some sort of specialist advice, yeah, because there are very strict timetables that need to be followed, and if you don't get the right advice, uh-huh, you could end up subject to a criminal investigation when the revenue may have decided that they're not going to do so.
Gosh.
Oh my goodness, this is just like, I've got a question, obviously, as a complete novice. If you was a business and you got sent a letter, how do you know whether that letter is legit? Because obviously there are people out there really, you know,
Committing fraud on those type of things.
Well, yeah. I think that generally, in my experience, if a fraudster is going to send you a letter, then they are probably going to be trying to get money from you. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to send you a letter saying that we suspect you of fraud. Mm. However, what I have heard happen is where someone is telephoned, and then there is a scammer on the telephone saying we're from the Revenue Criminal Department or whatever, you know, name they use up. You know, we're going to come and arrest you unless you make an immediate payment.
Right.
Mm. So I've certainly heard of that scam.
So everything will
which
always
is over
come
the telephone, but the revenue, if they're going to subject you to a civil fraud investigation, then that will always be in letter.
Mm-hmm.
If they're going to go down the criminal route, then the likelihood is they're going to turn up on your doorstep at 7 o'clock one morning, and you're probably going to get arrested.
Mm. So never pay anything, always wait, obviously, investigate it.
Mm. Fantastic, good. I think that, I mean, there's so much in there already. I think we need a song to digest all of that, Phil. So thank you. But I think what we'll do when we come back is we'll talk about some of the sort of the common mistakes, if you like, that people often make when dealing with an HMRC inquiry. But also talk about, you know, things like disclosure facilities, obviously, that exist out there for people to, you know, come forward and actually, you know, make a declaration about their tax status. So, and also I think, the effect that COVID is having on the business landscape, and in particular, you know, the loans that obviously businesses have been taking advantage of, and grants, obviously, all of which ultimately is taxable income. So do stay with us. We'll play a little bit of music and we'll talk to Phil again straight after this.
105.9 Academy FM.
BizConnect. Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world. Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Welcome back. You're listening to the BizConnect radio show, and we're in, I think it's fair to say, Lynette, deep conversation with Phil Berwick at the moment from Berwick Tax about tax investigations and the nature of tax investigations. Phil, before the break, I mentioned that I wanted to talk about some of the common mistakes that people make when dealing with the revenue, from your point of view, what do you see as the sort of the classic errors people make on that front?
Well, there's quite a few things that I see, and I guess I tend to see the worst of what's happened, because I get called in when it's all gone horribly wrong, maybe when the accountants have been involved in correspondence with the revenue. But there are some basics. One of the first things that I always do is to check to make sure whether revenue have sent out an inquiry notice, whether or not the inquiry notice is valid. As I said before, there's a statutory framework and the rules are there for the revenue. So it's important to make sure that the revenue have issued the inquiry notice within that time frame. And often I get asked to look at a situation maybe 1 or 2 years in.
Mm.
First thing I do is look at the original correspondence, and sometimes, unfortunately, the original inquiry notice that the revenue issued was invalid, but it hadn't been picked up.
Right, so you may just be able to dismiss it out of hand on that basis.
You may, depending on the circumstances, you may be able to close it down on the basis that it was an invalid notice.
Yeah. Knocked out on a technicality, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly, and you know, but most taxpayers, individuals, are not going to know the rules.
No.
But as I say, that's something that does crop up more often than perhaps it should do.
Mm-hmm.
Another area that I tend to find is an issue is when the revenue send out an inquiry notice, they will also send out a request for information, either information or documents, and I often find that more information has been provided to the revenue than is necessary.
Mm.
And I think there can be an assumption that because the revenue have asked for the information or they have asked for the documents, that they're entitled to it.
Mm.
And that isn't always the case. And I think it's about being robust, looking at what the revenue have asked for. And I had a case, one example of many, the revenue had started an investigation. They'd asked for records and information going back 10 years. Unfortunately, I was contacted before any information had been provided to the revenue. I looked at the request from the inspector and I communicated with the revenue, and I got that list of information whittled down to 1 year. And we only provided information for 1 year. So that saved that particular client an awful lot of time, an awful lot of money and inconvenience as well. And I think the third area that I would pick up on is meetings. Often when the revenue start an inquiry, they will want to meet with the taxpayer. That's kind of put on hold during COVID, but we will see a return to that. And the basic position is that in any of the revenue civil inquiries, they don't have the statutory right to demand that you attend a meeting. And often clients will say to me, I've got nothing to hide, therefore I'm happy to go along to meet with the revenue. But you don't know what questions the revenue are going to ask. You don't know what information the revenue have got. And with all my experience as an inspector, as an investigator in the private sector for many years, I don't take clients to meetings. In the last 7 years, I've taken one client to a meeting with the revenue. And that's because the client didn't have anything to lose. When they came to me, they were already in a very bad position anyway.
Gosh, that's reassuring to know as well, isn't it? That you've got somebody betting on your side, like you, obviously. I just want to talk. I mean, you mentioned COVID. I wanted to talk about that briefly because there's been an awful lot of sort of free money and cheap money floating around, hasn't there? And I guess on the back of that, you know, that there's something that the HMRC use as a tactic, if you like, called nudge letters. So, you know, just explain to us what a nudge letter is and why that might actually be something that we start to see more of on the back of you know, the furlough scheme, for example, and bounce back loans and everything else.
Well, a nudge letter is a relatively new tactic from the revenue. They started using them about 10 years ago. There isn't any statutory basis for the issue of those. And a nudge letter is where the revenue send a standard letter to usually many thousands of taxpayers in the same sector. It may relate to, rental property, or more recently in relation to the furlough scheme. And these are very carefully and cleverly worded letters that the revenue send out, writing to people in that particular area, giving them a bit of a nudge. If you've done something wrong, then please come and tell us. We find people in this particular sector may have made a mistake. If you've got something to tell us, let us know. And the revenue may use different versions of the same letter, look at the response they get, and then fine-tune the issue of subsequent letters to see which ones gives them the greatest response.
And you mentioned hospitality off air and the kind of the marrying up of the eat out to help out promotion, and obviously, you know, furlough and kind of saying, okay, well, a business that had, you know, most of its staff on furlough has also claimed under the Eat Out to Help Out scheme, you know, in terms of kind of funding there. You know, how can that possibly be?
Absolutely. The revenue have got better over the years of making use of the vast volume of information that they've got. And certainly, you know, with the COVID, they've been looking at the data that they've got in on Eat Out to Help Out, comparing that with the furlough claims. And if you've got a business in the in a restaurant, say, that apparently have furloughed all their staff, but they benefit significantly from Eat Out to Help Out, they're likely to get some sort of approach from the revenue, and that may either be some sort of statutory inquiry notice or one of the nudge letters, where the revenue shake the tree to see who's going to come forward.
How do I deal with a nudge letter then, you know, in that instance? What's your advice there in terms of, you know, responding to that? Because you've already said you don't ignore you know, a letter from HMRC, ignore at your peril. But a nudge letter, as you say, isn't necessarily going down a statutory inquiry kind of route. It's a sort of a probing letter, isn't it, in many ways?
No, absolutely. And certainly the advice not to ignore a letter equally applies to a nudge letter. And when the nudge letter comes out, it will say, if there is a problem, then tell us, sign this certificate that you're going to make a disclosure, or sign this other certificate to say that there aren't any problems. Mm-hmm. And the advice is, do not sign under any circumstances any of the certificates that are sent out with a letter. Mm-hmm. Take advice. If there is a problem, then you deal with it. And I know we're going to come on to talk about voluntary disclosures, but you deal with it and in a proactive way. Mm-hmm. But certainly don't sign any of those certificates, because they could come back to haunt you.
Yeah. So let's talk about disclosures then. So a disclosure facility is something that allows you, to make a voluntary statement about your tax affairs, I'm assuming?
Yes, and there have been a number of different disclosure facilities over the years. At the moment, there aren't too many. And I think the first point to say is that there isn't a one-size-fits-all. If you've got a disclosure to make, you really need to be taking specialist advice. But at the moment, there's something called the Worldwide Disclosure Facility, which has been open for a number of years, and that's where someone's got a disclosure to make in relation to tax liability that relates to income or assets overseas. And one of the dangers with that, another example to highlight that, I got approached by a client, and their situation was they'd had one of these nudge letters from the revenue. They'd gone to their accountant. The accountant had made a disclosure through the Worldwide Disclosure Facility, calculated the tax to be in the region of £10,000. Unfortunately, there was some income that the accountant hadn't taken into consideration. They hadn't done a thorough investigation. The revenue picked up the case for inquiry, and they came back and were seeking a liability, including a penalty of 100%, of nearly £400,000.
Oh my goodness.
And that was the point at which I got the call from the advisor.
Help!
Can I help? And where that one came to, that I got the revenue to agree that there wasn't any penalty due, got some of the tax reduced, but the client still ended up with a bill of about £150,000.
How could the accountant have got it that wrong, I wonder? So, I mean, that's a good example, isn't it? You know, accountants aren't necessarily the best place to offer advice on these things.
Well, I think it's a specialist area. There were some technical issues that hadn't been taken into consideration, various other factors as well. And I think for someone like me, when you're dealing with these type of cases day in, day out, with the revenue experience, I'm very familiar with the way that the revenue work, the way that they think. And as I say, I'm dealing with these cases every day, so I'm more in tune to the type of issues that need to be picked up.
So I guess what I'm hearing from this is it's never too early to have a conversation with you, to get in touch. If I've received a nudge letter, or if I've received a formal notice of investigation, a statutory investigation letter, the earlier I engage in a conversation with you, the better.
Absolutely. The earlier the better. And I always say it's never too late to get in touch, but I have had a number of times when the investigation has been going on for 4 or 5 years, and when you get called in at that stage, your ability to help is somewhat limited, but there's always usually something that I can do. But yes, I'd much rather have a call, initial conference with the client early on in the process, whether it's just to give a bit of guidance, work with the accountant, or maybe it needs a bit more specialist help and taking over the handling of the inquiry. Yeah.
So you're quite happy to have that initial conversation, perhaps on the telephone, just to get an understanding of the overall picture. And in terms of your remuneration from then on, how does that work, Phil? How do you actually charge for your services?
Well, as you say, usually very happy to have some sort of initial consultation, maybe over the telephone, get an assessment of the position, and then happy to talk with the particular client about fees. Typically, it's on an hourly basis. But clients do want certainty, and sometimes it's possible to do some or all of the work on a fixed fee basis, possibly. And it's looking at it on a case by case basis, Martin.
Brilliant. So on that basis, how do we get in touch with you? What's the best way to connect with Berwick Tax?
Well, they can either get details through the Berwick Tax website, or I can be contacted on 07956 492026, or by email phil.berwick, berwick@berwicktax.co.uk.
And the website will be berwicktax.co.uk then?
berwicktax.co.uk.
Fantastic. Phil, it's been wonderful to have you with us. Thank you so much.
It's blown my mind.
Yeah, it really has. So much food for thought there, I think, for many, many business owners out there. But also, I think, some comfort in knowing that there is expert help out there, or when we need it. So
absolutely, always happy to help, and be delighted to speak with any of your listeners.
Fantastic.
Martin, thank you very much.
Thank you again for joining us. But again, we're going to play a little bit of music now, and when we come back, Lynette, we're going to have a conversation with you,
a bit lighter,
on a slightly lighter note, about all the wonderful things that we can spend our money on in the leisure industry in the next few months. So do stay with us, and we'll be straight back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back to the Biz Connect radio show. Thank you so much for your company this afternoon. And I'm delighted that we're now actually going to have a conversation with our fabulous co-host, Lynette Wood.
Oh, I know. How exciting.
Lynette, it's not often you're in the limelight, is it, on the show, talking about what you do?
Absolutely not. No, so I'm delighted to be able to share today.
Great. So tell us a little bit about your hotel group, Q Hotels Collection, and what you do within the organisation.
So I'm a key account manager within the Q Hotel Collection, and our hotels are 21 hotels across the UK, and they're a collection of hotels that are four-star, all of them are four-star hotels. We have 4 Hilton hotels, 2 Marriotts, and 1 Mercure, and then the rest are individual hotels, obviously, and they could be manor houses or grand halls, for example. They're a very diverse group of hotels.
Uh-huh. And your role as a key account manager, presumably that's on a sort of very business relationship level, is that right? As opposed to people that want to book in for a weekend break or a short stay, for example.
Yeah, so we have different key account managers within the company, and I do look after corporate, so corporate meetings and events, but we do have a lady in the team that does leisure as well.
Fantastic. So tell us, what's post-COVID, are we now kind of, are we bouncing fully up and running again? What are kind of inquiries looking like for events? Because I know, obviously, under lockdown, that business would have been non-existent. Are you seeing are we back to kind of pre-COVID days in terms of businesses inquiring again?
Yep, definitely. I think start of the year, obviously, we had January where it was Omicron, so everything that was booked in January, February has moved to March and April, which is great. So it hasn't moved 6 months, 8 months down the line. It's only moved a couple of months down the line. And inquiries now, definitely for Q2 and Q3, are through the roof. And I actually think that if you want a conference, and I'm not just saying this, so I think this is across the board, not just across our 21 hotels, that you need to get in early, because availability is going to be tough, I think, this summer.
So what types of events are you seeing inquiries for? Is it sort of large business conferences that perhaps haven't happened for 2 years and now it's catch up, or is it smaller events?
No, large conferences. Right. I went to one of our hotels in Cheltenham last week to meet some of my clients that were there. They hadn't seen each other for 2 years. It was their first conference, and it was just so lovely. They were all delighted to be back in the room together. Yeah. And I think during COVID times, people are like, oh, I think we'll stick with Zoom, or I think we'll stick with Teams, and now they're like, of that.
Yes.
We need to absolutely be out there talking to each other face-to-face.
Yeah, fantastic. Good. And I know you were obviously presiding over an event at the Ashford International Hotel last Friday, the Kent Women in Business Awards. So how many people were at that, for example?
300 at the Kent Women Business Awards, and it was amazing. I mean, it's not the first one to take place since COVID. They did take place last September as well for 2021, but it's just absolutely amazing just to be in a room. The atmosphere was electric.
Yeah, I bet. So the Ashford International Hotel locally, that people will probably know, just off the M20, is obviously one of your hotels.
Yeah, I was the director of sales there as well.
Yes,
so
you
it's
were,
one
weren't
of my
you?
Babies.
Yeah, yeah, and I certainly pop in on a regular basis and have meetings in the atrium. Phil, are you a visitor to the hotel as well?
I am. Yes, I've been there a number of times. I've been to a number of networking meetings, yeah. And like you, it's a convenient place for meeting contacts in Ashford.
Yeah. Have you been in recently, Phil, since they've had the refurbishments?
I haven't, no.
Oh, you must come in, yes.
I have, yeah.
It's no longer pink, as the people would know. Maybe it's more blues and light and airy, some new furniture, and the hotel's had a huge refurbishment in their meeting and event space as well, and across the corridors, in the restaurant, and in their gymnasium.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that, because it is a spa hotel.
Absolutely, it
is. So it has a pool, facilities. And a brand new gymnasium, is that right?
Yes, and honestly, if you
struggle to say that word, it's not a word I use very often.
I think if you ever go to that hotel and meet Cody, who's the leisure spa manager, he is so enthusiastic about his new equipment. It is unreal. But they're this new equipment is a bit sort of similar to the Peloton bikes, you know, where you can go on and you can sort of walk within, you know, New York, for example.
Oh,
you can run down the streets.
Yeah.
You can watch telly on them if you wanted to watch telly on them.
Yeah.
They're, it's really good. It's looking lovely. And I absolutely would recommend anybody to pop down.
They were, I think, Peloton or one of these other sort of big firms that's kind of come to the fore under COVID were under the spotlight recently, weren't they? I think they were featured in two TV series or episodes that went out sort of consecutively, almost completely different shows, but US shows. And I think two of the guys that were sort of starring in the shows both had heart attacks using their Peloton machine.
They got some bad press, didn't they?
Oh,
so,
my goodness.
Yeah.
Peloton weren't too pleased about that, quite understandably.
Yeah.
They're not Peloton. Just
no.
Hotels, but they're similar to that sort of brand, and they are really great machines.
So, I mean, on a business level, obviously, that's fantastic. But, you know, on a kind of leisure level, we're seeing a sort of a new dynamic in the marketplace now, aren't we? You know, people have got used to the idea of spending holidays, you know, in the UK again, haven't they? This sort of staycation kind of concept.
Do you know what, Martin? I'm really glad you said that, because I wonder this year, last year for us was absolutely storming through the summer months. We are lucky to have some beautiful hotels where you actually would like to go on your holiday and spend, you know, a week there, which I think has been unknown previously to that. But I do wonder this year, are people looking to go abroad, you know, but or is there this case that people are happy to stay within the UK and support hospitality in the UK? And I really hope they are this year.
Mm. I think we're going to see a mixture of the two. I know a lot of people that have rushed away, you know, this spring or early spring, you know, to places like Tenerife and the Canary Islands. And there's been some fabulous sort of offers going. But I also think that, you know, people like to sort of also have a sort of stay-at-home holiday as well now. I think, you know, people have seen all of the kind of beautiful coastline that we've got to offer, for example, and all of the experiences that we can offer. So I'd like to think there'll be a sort of a mixture of the two, a nice sort of dynamic going forward.
And you'll be pleased to know, so seven of our hotels have golf resorts.
Oh, yes.
And we have spent, you know, quite a bit of money on our golfing as well across the pond, across the different courses, are they called? I'm not into golf.
Yes.
So I think for golf breaks, I think it's going to be a perfect place.
You've got a lovely one in Norfolk, haven't you? Is it Dunstan Hall?
They just had £1 million refurbishment on their grounds and floors. I went there in January and it's looking absolutely lovely.
Beautiful period building. And
gorgeous.
Fabulous golf course as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
And what a lovely area. I mean, you know, you can't go far wrong, you know, Norfolk. It's a lovely place.
No, and I think, as you say, Martin, a lot of people with COVID, you know, the staycation has opened their eyes. That there are some wonderful places in the UK. You don't have all the hassle of going to the airport, the queuing, the forms you need to fill in. You know, there's no, you know, you don't have those issues that you get staying in the UK.
Absolutely. Yeah, good. So we've got a couple of sort of key things coming up. We've got, in particular, Easter holidays
coming
up. 17th of April, I believe, is Good Friday.
Yeah.
So presumably people can book in for a kind of an Easter break with you.
Yes,
if
you can
if
do
they
Easter breaks. You can do spa breaks or golfing holidays. Mm-hmm. You know, our website is qhotels.co.uk. Very easy. And we've got hotels within, if you wanted to go to Glasgow, Yorkshire, for example. The Queen's at Leeds has had a £16 million refurbishment.
I know that hotel well.
Absolutely stunning. So it's a really lovely hotel if you want to go to a city centre break.
Yeah.
So yeah, absolutely. I would recommend it to anybody.
Lots of options. Fantastic. And if I'm interested in more of a kind of a business meeting or organising a conference, who's the best person to kind of contact? Can I come direct to you, for example, to make
absolutely.
An inquiry?
I'm more than happy for anybody to come direct to me.
Yeah.
And I could obviously direct them to the hotel. It depends on obviously how large the conference is and how we deal with that, but I can direct them to the individual hotel or introduce them to somebody. I'm more than happy to do that.
Fantastic. Good. So what's the best way to get in touch with you then,
so
Lynette?
My email address is lynette.wood@theqhotelcollection.co.uk.
Fabulous. Good. Well, lovely to have you with us today, also to give us an update there on everything that's going on within the hotel group. And I guess there's just a sort of feeling of euphoria now, isn't there, amongst the staff, because it's been such a difficult time for hospitality.
Yeah, I think also you talk about staff, it's been difficult to get staff in hospitality. People have decided it's not really the career for them anymore, you know, they've moved out, but I think that it definitely is coming back. It was nice when we were at the Ashford International, there was a huge amount of staff there to serve that event, you know, with four people behind the bar, and it's so nice to see everybody's definitely feeling that we're back to normality. Hopefully.
I didn't want to mention that as the sort of the elephant in the room, you know, in terms of staff shortages and, you know, recruitment kind of problems, but you feel the kind of the tide has turned there and people are coming back to the industry now.
I think coming back to the industry or trying the industry.
Right, good.
I was only with friends yesterday chatting about hospitality and as a career, and you know me, Martin, I absolutely love hospitality, so it's a subject I could talk about for a long time in terms of a career. And I think whether you're, you know, younger, obviously, and at school, etc., or whether you're older, there's definitely jobs available out there.
Yeah, and hopefully people have just, you know, have seen the light at the end of the tunnel in terms of COVID finally, you know, hopefully we've kind of broken the back of it. And now they're kind of being more realistic about their sort of employment situation and the need to kind of get back into work and get back on the career ladder. So that's positive, yeah, because we've got a lot of job vacancies in the country at the moment that need filling. So that's all good to hear. Fantastic, good. I think what we'll do is we'll play a little bit more music, and then when we come back, I wanted to just give a quick update on some business grant funding that's out there at the moment that our listeners might be interested in particular, if they're investing in kind of sustainable solutions for their business moving forward. So do stay with us, and we'll be back for a quick recap on all of that and a goodbye straight after this in the final part of the show.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back, everybody, to the final part of the Biz Connect radio show today. We've had a fascinating conversation in the first part of the show with Phil Berwick from Berwick Tax, all about tax investigations. We've just heard from my lovely co-host, Lynette Wood, all about Q Hotels and their business and leisure offering in the marketplace. And now it's down to me to just do a quick overview of some of the grant funding programs that are out there at the moment that you might be interested in particular green grants. So KCC were on the show a couple of weeks ago with us, Rob Robinson, and they were talking about the launch of a new grant program called SeaCare, which is now up and running. And basically what this enables you to do is access up to £1,500 of expertise completely free of charge, and that could be in relation to energy efficiency measures, for example, looking at lighting and heating, for example, for your business premises and the equipment that you need to kind of upgrade for that. It might be waste reduction in your business, looking at that. It might be creating sustainable transport solutions. It might be looking at biodiversity. But I think far and away the most attractive part of the scheme that businesses might want to look at is being able to access some net zero transition planning, and that will enable you to basically employ the services of an accredited consultant within the scheme to actually sit down with you as a business owner and map out your business roadmap to net zero, and that will include understanding, for example, your existing carbon footprint. So incredibly useful program that's just launched. The information for which you'll find on our website, which is greenbusinesshub.eco, along with some other programmes such as Locase, Low Carbon Across the South and East, which is another KCC programme that actually runs across Kent, Essex, East Sussex and Surrey and Hampshire as well now. And that will enable you to access up to £10,000 worth of grant funding on a 60-40 basis. So the business putting in 60% and Locase putting in 40%. But that could pay for programmes, for example, to create energy efficient initiatives within your business on an energy level, for example, very topical at the moment. It could actually help you develop products and services that are going to be more sustainable in the marketplace. So again, you know, something worth looking at. Free money there. Up to £10,000. The minimum grant is £1,000. So, well worth looking into. There is an electric van incentive at the moment called Kent Revs, where you can try an electric van free of charge for 2 months. And I think you'll even be able to take advantage of a free electric vehicle charger install at your home, for example, as well. They have a range of vans on offer: Renault Kangoos, Renault Zoes as well. So that also, along with Locase, you'll find on the Green Business Hub website as well. And finally, within the Locase program, there's also something called Steps to Environmental Management. And this is a workshop series, and actually there is one this Friday that you might want to register for, that again is very much geared towards helping your business transition to net zero as well. So lots and lots of fantastic sort of green grant funding initiatives out there. Do get yourselves up to speed with all of that. Ultimately, it is in many instances it is free money that you can access for your business. So, you know, at least look into that. But as I say, I do believe that certainly what I'm seeing is more and more businesses now need to start thinking about how they're going to create this roadmap to net zero. And I think in particular the new C-Care program will be very, very helpful in that respect, in terms of accessing expertise. That does bring us to the end of the show today, Lynette.
Thank you very much for having me, Martin.
Thank you for being here. Phil, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you very much for having me on the show, Martin, and goodbye. Thank you.
It's been incredibly insightful, hasn't it, I think, Lynette, today, to say the least.
As I always say, learn so much on these shows.
Absolutely. The show will be uploaded to our website, kentbizconnect.co.uk, as a listen again by midday tomorrow. So, you know, if you want to catch up with anything that Phil was talking about, for example, in terms of tax investigations, you can always listen to the show again on our dedicated website. So I think for now, that's everything. And we will be back in 2 weeks' time. I nearly said 2 years then.
Oh, dear.
In 2 weeks' time with another show and two fabulous guests. But for now, it's goodbye from us.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
105.9 Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.